Now on Radio 4 Extra, in part two of Thomas Hardy's powerful tale of terrible mistakes, we're about to find out what else has been hidden from the mayor of Casterbridge.
Thinking back over his past life, Michael Henchard recalls how, as a young man drunk at Weydon Fair, he'd sold his wife Susan and their infant daughter Elizabeth Jane to an unknown sailor. 19 years later, the sailor being lost at sea, Susan had returned with Elizabeth Jane in search of Henchard. She found to her amazement that he'd risen from being a humble hay trusser to become the mayor of Casterbridge and a successful corn and hay merchant, with a new ambitious manager, the Scotsman Donald Farfrae, to whom Elizabeth Jane was instantly attracted. Meeting with Susan in secret, Henchard had told her how he'd sworn an oath to give up drink for 21 years and proposed that they should remarry, begging her never to tell Elizabeth Jane about his shameful act in the past.
Do you forgive me, Susan?
Never mind.
All in good time. Judge me by my future works.
Goodbye, Michael.
I watched her leave the arena by the southern gateway.
Like a different spirit there are now, Susan.
She was, and she was not, my wife. But my daughter.
Oh, I got you back. My own. Oh, my own lovely Elizabeth Jane.
How could I have known Elizabeth? How could I have even dreamt of the truth? No, I had no such thought, for my head was filled with another trouble, a matter I had spoken of to no one.
156. 1.5 pence. Farfrae, there you are. Still grubbing through those account books of mine.
Well, there's a fob or two to clear up here, Mr. Henchard.
Huh?
Well, you see here, the weight of the corn sacks must have been overestimated by at least a pound and a half per sack, because, look, when it was milled...
Gad, what's a pound or so, lad? I'm not one for such finicking details.
No, but when you weighed the sacks, sir, did you check the scales?
Scales? What scales? I judge the weight by lifting, man, not filling with scales and rulers.
But what about whole ricks? How do you measure those?
Well, by stretching out my arms and closing one eye. Well, that's as good a way as any, my book. Now, look, you shall do no more tonight.
Mr. Henchard.
There's time enough tomorrow. Now, you come indoors with me. You have some supper. Come on. No arguments.
And we feasted on cold pigeon pie.
There. And there's some home brewed here, if you'd like some.
Oh, I'll join you in a glass with pleasure.
Oh, no, I don't drink it because of my oath. I brew it for my work people.
Very pleasant and easy company he was.
But I'll know Mr. Snow, certainly.
And when the meal was over and I'd put a light to the hearth, I felt as though a great pressure was inside me to speak out and tell him.
You know, it's odd two men should meet as we've done, and at the end of the first day I should wish to talk to you on a family matter, but damn it all, Farfrae, I've no one else to speak to. And why shouldn't I tell you?
And I told him my whole history. At first he seemed to listen with only half an ear. But as I came to the crux of the story...
And so, without a lie, I tell you, I sold her. And the sailor paid me and he took her off.
By heaven.
Well, then he was all attention.
And I've had neither sight nor sound of her nor the child till this very day, and now she's come back.
Come back?
This very morning. And what's to be done?
Well, Can you know make amends? Take her back and live with her?
Well, I'm but far afraid by doing right by Susan. I wrong another innocent woman.
How's that, then?
Because in the course of a benighted life like mine, 'twas impossible not to make more blunders than one. Oh, sweet heaven!
I've been doing a deal of business over in Jersey for many years now, and one autumn, when stopping there, I fell quite ill and sank into one of the gloomy fits I sometimes suffer from. It was while I was in this state I met a woman. Well, a young lady, I should call her, for she was of good family, though her parents were both dead. And she was as lonely as I was. She happened to be staying at the same boarding house as me, and when I was pulled down, she took pity and began to look after me.
Mr. Henchard. Dear, dear, don't look so sad.
She got to have a foolish liking for me. Heaven knows why. I wasn't worth it.
Shall I make you more comfortable?
But by being together in the same house and her feelings warm, we naturally got intimate.
Let me wipe your brow, Michael. Like this.
Well, I won't go into particulars, but suffice it to say, we honestly meant to get married. Of course, there arose a scandal, which did me no harm, but was ruin to her. Anyway, at last I was well and came away, though after she apparently suffered even more on my account. And she didn't fail to tell me so in one letter after another.
Aye?
Yeah, I've still got them all somewhere. So, as I'd not heard of Susan for so long, I thought I'd make this other one the only return I could. And I asked her if she'd marry me. Well, she jumped for joy, and no doubt we'd soon have been married. But behold, Susan appears.
Well, put that in a book and no one would believe it.
Oh, wouldn't they? And they've never lived. As it stands, Farfrae, I can't do justice to both. And one woman must be disappointed. It seems to me that one must be the second. My first duty is to Susan.
In the end, it was all for thee, Elizabeth Jane. All for thee that I changed course and courted your mother.
You got it very comfortable here, Susan.
They're better lodgings than I've been used to.
But not for long, eh? And Elizabeth Jane suspects nothing of what is past, I mean.
No, she's free of any thoughts that way.
She's out this afternoon, you say?
Yes.
Well, then this is a good opportunity for me to ask you to name the happy day.
See a man wait so long before to take so little. Well, there's a chance even for thee after this, Nance Mockery.
Because if I'd marry any such as he, she'll wish her cake though before she's done of him.
Stuff, he's well enough. She couldn't wish for a better man, poor twanking woman like her.
She'll rattle round in there, her and that young lass.
Dost remember that first day, Elizabeth? I remember thy thin face and the lines on thy young brow when thou first came. Oh, but thou didst blossom, my lovely girl. Aye, like a wondrous lily made flesh, who deigned to sit each morning at my table, by my side.
You know, I seem to remember when she was a baby, Elizabeth Jane's hair was... didn't you tell me Elizabeth's hair promised to be black?
Oh, did I? You finished your breakfast quickly this morning, Elizabeth Jane?
Yes. I want to pay a visit to the bookshop this morning, Mother, and it looks like rain. May I leave the table, please, sir?
Oh, Eyeless, off you go.
Kindly forgot myself then.
What I meant was the girl's hair looked as if it was going to be darker when she was a baby.
It did, but they alter so.
Oh. Well, their hair gets darker, I know, but I wasn't aware it lightened ever.
Oh, yes.
Well, so much the better. Now, Susan, I've been thinking. I want to have her called Miss Henchard. What? Now, not Miss Newson. Lots of people do it already, in carelessness, and I don't like t'other name at all, for my own flesh and blood. I'll advertise it in the Casterbridge paper. That's the way they do it. She won't object.
No. Oh, no, but...
Well, then, I shall do it.
It's just...
Well, what? Well, surely, if she's willing, you must wish it as much as I do.
Oh, yes. If she agrees. Let us do it, by all means.
Oh, sir. My mother told me what you were discussing this morning about my name. Do you wish this changed so very much, sir?
Oh, my blessed fathers, what an ado you women make about a trifle. Now, Elizabeth Jane, just please yourself. Huh? Don't need go agreeing to it to please me.
Sir.
It was strange. Oh, but I put it down to the mysterious ways of women. And sought out my usual remedy against such brain-fogging puzzlements.
Ah, Frank!
Ah, Mr. Henchard. I was hoping to see you this morning. I've been thinking. You know, we're not best using our time when we walk and drive about together. You could make better use of me, and we could cover twice the amount we do now if we work separately.
God damn it, what's all the world? I like a fella to talk to. Now, you come with me to Durnover, like we planned, and don't take too much thought about things, or you'll drive me crazy.
And as we walked, I looked up and saw thee, Elizabeth, standing at thy window, looking at me, was it? Or at him?
Meg?
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Elizabeth. Did I startle you?
Oh, it was nothing, Phoebe. I was just gazing out at
him. There's a note been left for you, miss.
Oh, thank you. Who is it from?
I don't know, miss. Found it downstairs on the hall table.
Oh, I see. Oh, thank you. Dear Elizabeth Jane, it would be to your undoubted benefit, and you would also oblige me greatly, if you would come at once to the granary on Durnover Hill. But... Oh, there's no name. Who's it from?
Miss Newson. I've kept the appointment, and I'm at your service.
Oh, Mr. Farfrae. Well, so have I. But I didn't know it was you who wished to see me, otherwise, well,
I wish to see you. I'm afraid there may be a mistake.
But didn't you ask me to come here? Didn't you write this?
No. At no hand would I have thought of it. But didn't you ask me? This is not your writing?
By no means.
Well, then it's somebody wanting to see us both. Oh. Who must have known I was coming to Durnover here with your father. Perhaps we'd do well to wait a little while longer. I suppose this could be a trick. If it is, it's a great pity to waste our time like this. So much to be done.
Oh, it is a great liberty.
Aye, that's so, Miss Newson. Well, I wouldn't stand for it hindering myself... But you...
Oh, I don't mind. Well, much.
No. Neither do I.
You're anxious to get back to Scotland, I suppose, Mr. Farfrae?
No, Miss Newson. Why would I be?
Well, I only supposed you might be from a song I heard you sing once at the Three Mariners. About Scotland and all, I mean. Well, you seem to feel it so deep down in your heart...
Well, you know, Miss Newson, you feel a song for a few minutes, and your eyes, they can even get quite tearful, but you finish it, and you don't mind it or think of it again for a long while. Oh, no, I don't want to go back. Yet I'll sing the song to you with pleasure whenever you like. I, I could sing it now. Not mind at all.
Oh, thank you indeed. But I fear I must go, rain or no.
Oh, do you know the wind has blown some husks and dust upon you? It's very bad to let rain come upon clothes when there's chaff upon them. It washes in. Spoils them.
Oh.
Here, let me help you. Blowing's the best.
Oh, thank you.
Bend forward a little, the top of your head.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Almost done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now I'll go and get you an umbrella.
No, no, really, there's no need. Oh, look, the rain's almost stopped. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So, by the device of some mysterious stranger, his eyes were opened to thee at last, were they, lass? About time. A beauty thou were, and are. Dost remember those gloves I once gave thee? Pale mauve they were. I thought it no harm to buy them for thee, and 'twas no harm, was it, lass?
No, no. I wanted to wear 'em for 'ee.
Aye, but how could you? You had no bonnet to go with them, eh, lass?
No.
And when you had the bonnet, you had no dress.
It was necessary to finish, Father.
And when the dress arrived, ah, me.
No parasol.
No parasol.
But I wanted to wear the gloves, Father. What else could I do?
Ah, oh, my Lisbeth. How I did love thee. And did he care for thee, lass, did he?
Where's Abel Whittle this morning?
Oh, he's not come yet, sir.
Did he love you too, as well as I?
Let's hope he gets here before Mr. Henshard does, eh?
Could be the second time this week.
But it all went wrong, didn't it, lass?
Ah, I think I see him, sir. He's puffing up the road now.
Where's Abel Whittle?
Here I be, sir.
20 minutes late, by God.
All wrong.
I'm dreadful sorry, your worship, but my poor dumb brain gets as dead as a clot before I've said my few scrags of prayers at night.
I don't want to hear it.
But, sir, let me clear up my point.
The wagon start at 4 tomorrow, and if you're not here,
your worship,
then I'll mortify thy flesh for thee.
Oh. Oh. He wouldn't hear my point. He asked me, and now I shall twitch like a moment and all night for fear of him.
It could have been heaven on earth, eh, Elizabeth? With the friendship and love between us three.
Abel Whittle! Out of bed, sir!
Oh,
out to the yard! Or you leave my employ today!
Oh, sorry, march Mr.
on! Never you mind your britches!
Sir,
you march on! Just to teach you a lesson, by God! On you go!
I'm sorry, sir!
But all unheeding, we set in motion from something so small as a stone cast into a pond. We create ripples strong enough to threaten the ground beneath our feet.
Hey, look.
For mercy's
sake, what's this?
It can't be helped, Mr. Farfrae. You see, he said he'd mortify my flesh if I didn't get up quick. I'll go to Blackmoor half naked as I do. Yes,
oh,
I will.
Abel, you get up in that wagon.
But I shall kill myself afterwards.
Go up.
The women will scream with laughter when they see me with no breeches.
For heaven's sake, Abel, go back home and get dressed properly. You'll have your death standing there.
What's this?
No, no, I can't. Mr. Henshard said...
I don't care what Mr. Henshard said.
What?
This is foolishness. Now, go and dress yourself, Whittle.
You're sending him back?
I am. I say this joke has been carried far enough.
And I say it hasn't. You get up in that wagon, Whittle.
Sir.
Not if I'm manager. He either goes home, or I march out of this yard for good. A word, Mr. Henshard.
man of your position should ken better, sir. It's tyrannical and unworthy of you.
It is not tyrannical. It's to make him remember. Why did you speak to me in front of them like that, Farfrae? You might have waited till we were alone.
All right, Abel. Off you go home. As quick as you can.
Don't think too hard of Mr. Henchard, sir. He kept Abel's old mother in colds and snuff all last winter at his own expense.
Is that so?
But the humiliation that day brought rested not on Abel Whittle, no, but on me. And I was no longer the most admired man in Casterbridge.
Harker, ma'am.
Excuse me, sir, but I'd be sent to ask if a race that could be valued, as my grandfather's just died the day before yesterday.
Where are you from, young man?
Durnover, sir. Stanage's farm.
Oh. Oh, very well, I'll come.
But please, will Mr. Farfrae come?
Well, I'm going that way later. Why, Mr. Farfrae? Why do people always want Mr. Farfrae?
I suppose because they like him so. That's what they say.
Oh, I see. That's what they say, eh? Well, they like him, I suppose, because he's cleverer than that, Mr. Henchard. Eh? Because he knows more. And in short, that old Mr. Henchard, he can't hold a candle to him, eh?
You've got it, sir. Well, some of it anyway.
Oh, there's more, is there? Well, now, what else? Now, come on, look. Here's sixpence for a fairy.
And he's better-tempered, and Henchard's a fool to him, they say. He's a diamond. He's yours for my money. I wish he was the master instead of Henchard, they said.
Oh, they did they? Here, you can go, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Henchard. You know yourself, the day.
I'm very well.
Well, I wanted to ask you, do you have any objection to lending some rickcloths to myself and a few others? We're thinking of getting up an entertainment on the Prince's birthday. You can, there's a national holiday declared for the day.
Oh? Well, of course I do.
Aye, and I'm thinking we'll need a shelter, so the rickcloths, well, they'll do very nicely, and we can charge admission at
you,
so
you,
much...
You have as many cloths as you like.
Thank you, sir.
And that was more gall and wormwood to me, Elizabeth. For, of course, as mayor, I should have been beforehand in coming up with such a scheme.
But, damn it, Farfrae's so cursed quick as to give no one else a chance.
But I still had a week to organise something.
Now, where's the best place to site it? Well, I could ask Donald. Hot teeth, what am I saying? I'll do it all myself.
And I chose the square earthworks just south of the town.
Bowbury Camp. That's the place.
A Roman fort once upon a time. But now, a green and pleasant spot. I arranged for greasy poles to be erected.
That's it, Abel. You drive them home.
Yes, mister.
And for smoked hams and cheese to be placed on the top. Hurdles to be placed in rows for jumping over.
Come on, Christopher, warm up your fingers and give us a tune while we get it all ready.
Sir.
I tell you, this would be a merry-making worthy of Casterbridge, this one, my lad.
I had a slippery pole laid across the river with a live pig tied at the other end for the man who could walk over and get it. There were wheelbarrows for racing.
And the posters for advertising be put about, Abel?
Oh, yes, they have, mister.
A stage for boxing and wrestling, sacks for jumping in, and a tea. A mammoth tea. To which everybody who lived in the borough was invited to partake.
Without payment!
Charge admission at so much a head. Oh, it's just like a Scotsman.
And the thought prompted me to go and see the progress of Farfrae's effort in the West Walk.
It's going up, that's right. That's not
going to
tie it on.
What are you doing with that rick cloth up there, Solomon?
Mr. Farfrae told me to hang it as high as I could, sir.
Not too tight.
I'm having a job, I can tell you.
Well, best of luck, Solomon.
Best of luck.
I felt easy in my mind once I'd seen that fiasco. My own ideas and preparations far transcended this.
Hey, Jonathan! This Rick cloth don't quite meet the other one, do it?
The morning dawned, and the sky, which had been remarkably clear up to now, was overcast.
That wind's got a hint of water in it, to my way of thinking, Maester.
And at 12 o'clock, the rain began to fall, small and steady.
And doing that cheese up there any good?
In another hour, it had resolved into such a smiting of the earth, no end could be foreseen.
Shall we enclose the ends of the awning over the tea tables, Mr. Henchard?
No. Too late for that.
The hams at the top of the poles dripped watered smoke. The pig shivered with cold. And the wind played upon the tent cords until the whole erection slanted to the ground and those who'd taken shelter under it had to crawl out on their hands and knees. That evening, towards 6, the storm abated, and I walked out into the dusk.
Hey, Christopher, are you going too?
I am.
Wait for me.
I noticed there was a general tendency towards the west walk, the spot Farfrae had chosen for his mad venture. As I turned into the avenue, I saw ahead a huge pavilion, constructed without poles or ropes, but instead using the boughs of the trees where they met at their densest point as a vault, to which rick cloths had been hung.
Ingenious.
It appeared like the nave of some great cathedral. Though the mood was anything but devotional.
Ooh, there's Donald.
Farfrae was there in the midst of the dances in the costume of a wild Highlander frigging himself about.
I'd call it poetry in motion if it weren't for his knees.
But my admiration was not long-lived. All faces were turned towards the light and dancing, and my presence was not always realised.
Mr. Henchard's rejoicings couldn't say good morning to this.
Who'd be wanting to go after that bleak place in a day like this? The man's a stumpole.
Aye. Farfrae must have come like a gift from heaven to him.
I hear what you say. It's true. They say his accounts are like bramblewood before.
Aye, but this young man, he's got the brains. He's sorted it all out.
Do you remember the wheat? Used to taste so strong a mice at times, you could fairly tell the breed.
Ah, but it's all purified now.
Aye, and that's through Mr. Farfrae. Be sure, Henchard should have a care to keep him.
But he won't. Not for long, good now.
No, he won't.
Oh, Mr. Henchard, your daughter is a fine dancer, sir.
Mr. Farfrae, I can't dance in the proper way.
No, you can. It's the feeling for it rather than knowing the steps that makes a dancer, wouldn't you say so?
Look here, Farfrae, about tomorrow. I'll go myself to Port Breedy Market. You can stay and clear up the mess here. Give your knees a rest. He was his Henchard. Cut you out, is he?
Jack's as good as his master, eh?
I see, Mr. Henchard. Your mistake was going so far afield. You should have chosen a sheltered place like this.
He'll be top sawyer sooner, you two. You mark my words.
No, he won't. Because his time as my manager is drawing to a close. He's shortly going to leave me. Aren't you, Farfrae?
He turned, and in his look I knew he could read my heart. All my jealousy, temper, pride, all naked before his gaze. I was overcome with shame.
Aye, Mr. Henchard, it is time to go.
Excuse me.
Miss Newson.
Mr. Parker.
It's like that I'm going to leave you soon.
Yes. I heard what
my stepfather said.
I fear I offended him by getting up this entertainment. And now perhaps I'll have to go to another part of the world altogether.
Why?
I wish I was richer, Miss Newson. And your stepfather had not been offended. I would ask you something in a short time. I would ask you tonight. But now it's too late. I never found out who wrote those notes, asking us to meet them at Dunover Granary that day. Did you ever find out, Miss Newson?
No, never.
I wonder why they did it.
For fun, perhaps.
It might have been that they wanted us to stay waiting there, talking to one another. Oh, well, I hope you Casterbridge folk will not forget me if I go.
I'm sure we won't. I wish you wouldn't go at all.
Really? Well, I'll think about that.
He's done what? Odd sand. Was I not his only friend? When he cut her with a sound shoe to his foot, didn't I make him stay here? Help him to a living?
I'm only telling you what I've heard, Michael.
So he's setting up in opposition to me, is he? What, in hay as well?
So I've heard.
Corn and hay? God.
Michael, I'm going to lie down.
I have shared my last crust with him at one time. Damn me, but I'll tussle with him now. A fair buying and selling, mind. Now, you know what they say. Business is war.
And where were you all the while, my Elizabeth? You didn't go about so much, I noticed, in your pale mauve dress and gloves. What, in your room upstairs, were you?
And by the time that bird has landed on the church roof, now, the bell will strike one. There. And he will turn the corner. He will, surely.
What didst thou do in thy room, Elizabeth? Not reading, not with your book still in that time of lovely weather, eh? Oh, my Elizabeth.
By the time I see another wagon pass in the yard, he'll turn the corner. He will turn the corner and... There! Walking and reading as usual.
An enemy, I proclaimed him. And sent him word.
That henceforth you pay no more addresses to my stepdaughter. She, on her part, has promised to do likewise.
And his very name was forbidden in the house. The sound of it, a canker in my soul.
Donald Farfrae. And he will pass beneath the window, but... he will not look up, nor wave his hand, nor smile. No. No, he will not, Elizabeth Jane. For such dreams are not for you.
Excuse me, miss, but your mother's asking for you.
Thank you, Phoebe. She's not worse, is she?
She's not too good, miss. Elizabeth.
Mother.
Oh, Mother. Don't cry, my child. Why hurt you? Oh, don't die, Mother. Don't leave me.
Shh. Give me some water. Listen, Mother.
I want to tell you something. You remember the note sent to you and Mr. Farfrae, asking you to meet someone in Durnover Barton. And you thought it was a trick to make fools of you.
Yes.
It was not a trick. It was done to bring you together. 'Twas I did it. I wanted you to marry Mr. Farfrae.
Oh, Mother. What reason?
Well, I had a reason. I twill out one day. I wish it could have been in my time. But then, nothing is as you wish it.
Did you forgive me before you died, Susan?
I must write. There's something I have to write.
You showed me no bitterness, no reproach, and yet love wasn't there. Not the second time, not the first. Was it, my poor Susan?
No. Leave me, for I must write. Something I must say.
Did you leave me not one word of comfort, Susan? Nothing to bring peace of mind.
There. And with wax, I shall seal it. And now, to Mr. Michael Henchard. Not to be opened till Elizabeth Jane's wedding day.
And as soon as I am carried out, let the windows be opened and all made as cheerful as you can for Elizabeth Jane. Those were her last words to me. Her last thought was for thee, Elizabeth. As will be mine.
Do you think much of old times, Elizabeth?
Yes, sir, often.
Who do you put in your pictures of them?
Mother and father. Nobody else, hardly.
Newson. Was Newson a kind father?
Oh, yes, sir. Very.
I stood parted from Susan by death, from Farfrae by estrangement, and from Elizabeth Jane by ignorance. Only...
What did your mother tell you about me? About my history?
That you were related by marriage.
Yes. That was very true. But she told you no more than that?
No, sir.
No. Now, she was protecting you, Elizabeth, from the truth. But I knew one day it must be spoken. Did you have no inkling at all, no suspicion?
Of what?
Well, we were ashamed to admit the truth to you, Elizabeth. But the fact is, Richard Newson was not your father. I am your father, Elizabeth. Your mother and I were man and wife when we were young. What you saw was our second marriage. We became parted, you see, and later we thought each other was dead. And Newson became her husband. Oh, Elizabeth, if you scorn me now or despise me, then so be it. But I couldn't stand your not knowing. Oh, no, don't cry. Oh, don't cry. Don't cry. I can't bear it. I'm your father. Why should you cry?
Can I go to my room?
Oh, yes. Yes, I don't want you to come to me all of a sudden. No, Elizabeth, I don't. I'll go away and not see you till tomorrow or when you like. And then I'll show you papers to prove my words. There. I'm gone. I won't disturb you anymore. Was I that chose your name, my daughter. Your mother wanted it Susan. There. Don't forget. 'Twas I gave you your name. One word more. You'll take my surname now, eh? Your mother was against it, but 'tis legally yours, you know. Though nobody need know that, you should take it as if by choice. It would mean a lot to me, Elizabeth.
If it is my name, well, I must have it, mustn't I?
Oh, very well. Yeah, very well. Now I'll go upstairs and hunt for some documents that will prove it all to you. But I won't trouble you with them till tomorrow. Good night. Oh, good night, my Elizabeth Jane.
Is it true to say we only recognise the state of happiness in hindsight? Or is it a peculiarity of my own that I never once stood back and said, this is for me true happiness, now.
Right now. Ah, proof. The first marriage certificate. I wonder if Susan kept it. Dear God, why did I not leave well alone? What malignancy was it that drove me, made me search through ancient scraps of...
How was this?
That placed in my hands at that very moment.
Not to be opened till Elizabeth Jane's wedding day. Seal's cracked. Some trifling fancy or other of poor Susan's, I suppose.
Is there no creature upon earth that can know bliss, know it, and rejoice in it? Oh, too powerful for our frames to contain, is it?
My dear Michael, for the good of all of us,
I have kept one thing a secret from you till now. I hope you will understand why. I think you will, though perhaps you may not forgive me. But, dear Michael, I have done it for the best. I shall be in my grave when you read this, and Elizabeth Jane will have a home. I can hardly write it, but here it is. Elizabeth Jane is not your daughter.
Oh, no.
Here it is. Elizabeth Jane is not your daughter.
No.
I will be in my grave when you read this. I hope you will understand why I did it. Elizabeth Jane is not...
No!
The child who was in my arms, Michael, when you sold me. She died 3 months after that. And this living one is my other husband's. I christened her by the same name we'd given the first. And she filled up the ache I felt at the other's loss. Michael, I'm dying. Forgive a woman you once deeply wronged, as she forgives you.
'Twas no less than I deserved. I took a candle, 'twas late by now, and went into her room. I saw her sleeping there, her face very peaceful. I looked at her fair skin, her brown hair, the form of her skull beneath her face, and I knew she was not mine. I left the house and walked to the river and along its banks. The water slunk in its course, noiseless and black, and accompanied my spirit. We both, the river and I, came to the ruined priory and the mill and the pool they called Blackwater. I knew I would never tell her the truth. I could never humiliate myself to do that.
morning, Phoebe.
Morning, miss.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've thought and thought all night about it. And I see that everything must be as you say. And so, I'm not going to call you Mr. Henshard anymore. You are my father. My dear father.
She bent and kissed my cheek. I remembered with what joy I had imagined this moment. I drank from my cup, and in my mouth was dust and ashes.
Oh, don't worry, Phoebe. Bide where you be,
miss.
Good God. Are you any fit to carry wash to a pig trough? Bide where ye be.
I'm sorry, Father. I meant to stay where you are.
Wast thou bewildered, my Lisbeth, that the moment you took my name and I avowed myself your true father...
Thank you, Phoebe.
Then for God's sake, leave off thanking that girl too, as if she were goddess born. Don't I pay her a dozen pound a year to do things for 'ee?
Pains my heart to remember, Elizabeth.
I can see you're sent to disgrace me to the dust.
And what didst thou do in thy room? You seem to sit there so long now, I hardly saw thee.
A mow, a mass, a mat.
With thy books, wast thou?
I must better myself.
For love of me, didst thou strive? While I set my heart in a box and knew only bitterness.
I'm not to be an alderman, it would seem.
Is that a letter, Father?
Aye. There it is, in black and white.
Why have they refused you?
Oh, ever since that night. The great dinner at the King's Arms. It was the night you and your mother arrived in town, wasn't it? There's been something in the air. Oh, who can say? And where have you been today?
Oh, I've been strolling in the walks in the churchyard, Father, till I felt quite leery.
God in heaven, Leary! One would think you worked on a farm.
I'm sorry, Father.
I'm burned. If this goes on, this house can't hold the two of us.
A marbat, a marble turquoise, per vitam suam, requiescat in pace. She loved and was loved throughout her whole life. May she rest in peace.
How badly you needed him then, Elizabeth, or anyone to be a friend to you. Anyone except...
Can I help you?
Oh, I...
Don't be upset. Oh, I can see how it is. She was your mother.
Yes.
Susan Henshard. Then Mr. Henshard is your father.
It was that afternoon a letter arrived.
My dear Mr. Henshard, don't be surprised. It is for your good and mine, as I hope, that I have come to live at Casterbridge. For how long, I cannot tell. That depends upon another, and he is a man, and a merchant, and a mayor, and one who has the
first right to my affections.
Father, have you any objection to my going away?
Gone away? Now, wait. I haven't finished this.
I have come here in consequence of hearing of the death of your wife. As soon as I knew she was no more, it was brought home to me by my conscience that I ought to ask you to carry out your promise to me. To this end, I decided to leave Jersey and establish myself here. Yours, Lucetta, High Place Hall.
Good heavens.
Hanno, what,
going away? No. I have no objection whatever. Where are you going?
Well, I've heard of an opportunity of getting more cultivated and being less idle.
Oh, well, then you make the best of it. If you can't get cultivated where you are...
Oh, so you don't object?
Object? No, not at all. But you won't have enough money, will you? I'll give you an allowance, if you like. So you can be independent of me and I can be independent of you. Will that please you?
Certainly, Father.
I'll see about it today.
What's going on here?
Well, you said I might go, Father.
Sad, yes. But I thought you meant next month or next year. God sees it, you take time by the forelock. Come here. Now, don't you go away from me. It may be I've spoken roughly to you, but there's something that caused it. I can't tell you now. But if you'll stop and go on living here, I'll tell you all in good time.
Father, I think it's best for us that I go now. I shan't be far away. And if you want me badly, I can soon come back again.
Well, what would be your address? In case I want to write to you. Or am I not to know it?
Oh, yes, of course. It's only in the town. It's High Place Hall. Go on, driver.
Very good. Up, up, up.
Another hour gone by. Dear me, the morning's almost gone.
Yes. Are you expecting something? Someone?
Oh, no. No. It's just the whole world seems to be occupied outside our windows, and here we are. Come. Put down your book and let's sit here and do something useful. Some netting. You can have these needles. I'll have this pair. And we can watch all the people at the market and feel part of it. Bring your chair up to the window next to me here.
There's those apple trees for sale again. Always in the same spot.
What trees? Where?
Down there, see, by the railings. I wonder if they bring the same trees back every week.
Good morning to you, Mr. Yopper.
Oh, those trees... What? Why, you've gone quite red, Elizabeth Jane.
Oh, no. Have I?
Are you particularly interested in anybody out there?
Oh, no.
Quite sure?
Oh, yes.
Can you see your father down there?
No. I saw him pass. He was going towards the yard.
Oh, but... I imagine your father will call to see you.
No, he won't come.
Why?
He's taken against me.
You've quarrelled with him?
Yes.
Then where you are is, of all places, the one he will avoid.
Oh, my dear Miss Templeman, what's the matter?
I like your company much.
Yes, yes, and so do I, yours.
But I fear I may not need you as a companion to live with me here for very much longer.
Oh,
think. I must think. Miss Henchard, will you go on an errand for me?
Yes, of course.
Will you go and order 8 lengths of the scarlet taffeta I pointed out to you last Tuesday? Oh, and 4 lengths of lace. Uh-huh. Be sure it's off-white, not pure. Right. Oh, and buttons. I shall need buttons. And have you ever seen the museum?
No, I haven't.
Oh, then you should do so at once. It's an old house in a back street. I forget where, but you'll find out. Oh, and there are crowds of interesting things. Skeletons, teeth, old pots and pans, all charmingly instructive. Oh, it's 10 o'clock now, so off you go.
And at precisely 10:15, I received a hasty note. Dear Michael...
You will be standing in view of my house today for 2 or 3 hours in the course of your business. So do please call and see me.
I have sent your daughter away for the morning, and so I shall be quite alone. Your Lucetta.
It happened I was busy with appointments for most of that morning, but I planned to pay her a call as soon as I was able. Until then, I imagined her sitting or lying on our couch, waiting for me.
And Mrs. J., if a gentleman calls, he is to be admitted at once. Very good, miss.
Waiting. Lying in that graceful way she had with one arm above her head. Oh. Waiting for me.
Come in. So you've come at last, you villain.
But I'm very sorry.
Oh, I've made a mistake.
I came and inquired for Miss Elizabeth Henchard, and they showed me up here. In no case would I have caught you so unmannerly if I'd known.
Oh, I was the unmannerly one.
But is it that I've come to the wrong house, madam?
Oh, no, sir. No. Miss Henchard will be here directly. Sit down. You must come and sit down. Now you're here.
In episode 2 of The Mayor of Casterbridge by Thomas Hardy, Michael Henchard was played by David Calder, Susan by Janet Dale, Elizabeth Jane by Andrea Ray, and Donald Farfrae by Jason Fleming. Lucetta was Sandra Birkin, Solomon Jerry Hinks, the child Edward Long, Abel David Holt, Jop Jonathan Wyatt, and other parts were played by Graham Colclough, Anna Keane, Richard Avery, Susan Jeffrey, and Martin Reeve. The music was arranged from traditional sources and performed by Dave Townsend with members of the Mellstock Band, Philip Humphreys, Tim Hill, and Catherine Locke. The Mayor of Casterbridge was dramatised by Sally Hedges and directed at Pebble Mill by Nigel Bryant.
And tomorrow in part 3 we'll find out how the lovely Lucetta works her magic on Farfrae and soon turns Henchard's business rival into something more. The Mayor of Casterbridge responds by returning to some of his old ways at the same time tomorrow.